This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
We're trying to get a hold of Michael Rothstein from ESPN.com in Detroit, but we're not getting him. So we'll open up the phone lines at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jeff. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Hey, John, how are you today?
Great.
Good. I was wondering what your opinion would be if the Seahawks might trade down from 18.
Yeah. I think that right now that's still seen, I guess, you know, there's still going to be a temptation because I think at 18 you might be able to get the second best pass rusher. You still might be able to get a, Geist, the running back from LSU. That may be a temptation, but I think, you know, the plan still would be to trade down because, again, as great as the running back is, the second best running back, I mean, there's so many good running backs that you still need to fill some voids, and this team would like to get more volume. You know, you want quality, there's no question, but, you know, that's still to be determined.
What do you think they could get if they just traded down even within the first round with a team like, say, Jacksonville or somebody like that?
I mean, for down there, Jacksonville, you might be able to get a second, but then probably what you're going to have to do is, you know, make a bunch of trades and get a bunch of thirds and then maybe trade up into the second round. I think that has to be, you know, one possibility there. So it's, it's one where, quarterbacks drive trades for the most part. And so if all of a sudden, I mean, let's say you trade down to 24 and some team wants to really then make a move on Mason Rudolph or Lamar Jackson as a second round pick, that's when you can maybe get the second round pick. But, you know, more than likely, I mean, a few trade downs get you thirds. But again, they really would like to get a second. But then if you get enough volume in trade downs with thirds, then maybe you can trade up into the middle of the second round.
Yeah, you don't see something like a trade out of the first position and then even picking up a two and a three.
No. I mean, that just doesn't go that way.
Too rich. Yeah.
That's just because, again, everybody follows a formula based on the way the trades are. And because of that formula, I mean, again, you can get it. But again, it's not going to be, I mean, you know, that's why you do some packaging and try to do some other stuff because those second round picks are so valuable because, you know, you are giving up starters. That's why, you know, the Jets made an interesting gamble in trading up, giving 3 second round picks because, you know, basically to get a quarterback, they're giving up 3 starters.
Yeah, one last question, John. There's a lot of talk about trying to get Earl extended, but does he really want to be here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he does sound like wishy-washy, and I think maybe that's you can see there's a little bit of that on this team right now in the sense that some of the guys that have been to championships and have been on the core group now starts to believe, okay, this isn't a playoff team, or maybe not a playoff team, but this is not a Super Bowl team, and so they don't mind aligning themselves with another team. But no, I think that he's pretty ambivalent. I think he'd like to be here, but again, I don't think that if he's not, I don't think he's going to be complaining. And joining us right now is Mike Rothstein from the ESPN.com in Detroit. And so, Mike, do you realize how much fun you're going to have with Luke Wilson?
Yeah, his initial teleconference, senior teleconference this year, to introduce some free agents, not all. Deshaun Shedd, for instance, did not have a teleconference, but not all. But he was great. He was really, really funny, really really insightful, and you could tell he has a really good sense of humor. And then you go look at his Instagram page, and you can just tell that it'll be probably a really interesting year, which from a pure media perspective, losing Eric Ebron was losing one of the more colorful guys in the locker room, just such a vibrant personality. So Luke Wilson at least can hopefully replace that from Eric Ebron. And, on the field remains to be seen.
What's his role now? They brought him in at $2.5 million.
It looks like it's maybe going to be as a starter, maybe be as a tight end one because of the rest of the roster. The only other guys on the roster have played a combined 17 NFL games with 4 career catches. That's Michael Roberts, their rookie last year. It was a 4th-round pick. It was their 3rd tight end. Eric Ebron's gone. Darren Fells has gone to Cleveland. So right now, Luke Wilson's got a pretty big role. That said, I anticipate that they'll use one of their draft picks on a tight end. Don't know how early they'll use one, but I think Luke Wilson is going to definitely have a shot to maybe get more work in Detroit than he did in Seattle, where he was behind Jimmy Graham, who obviously now is also left the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm. How do you look at the way the Lions have gone so far in free agency?
A lot of depth. No one that really stands out as, and wow, this is a great signing. Ezekiel Ansah, franchise tagging him, was probably their biggest move and was definitely their biggest money move. Other than that, I think they're just building depth pieces, finding guys who can be starters, definitely not household names. I wrote today that I think that they maybe got a little bit worse in free agency than got better, which is a concern considering I think the rest of the teams in their division got better. The Packers added a Pro Bowl offensive playmaker in Jimmy Graham, and they added Muhammad Wilkerson on a defense that needed it. The Vikings added a franchise quarterback in Kirk Cousins and another piece of that defensive line in Sheldon Richardson, and the Bears added an offense, at least a passing offense, to go along with Jordan Howard and the run game, and Mitchell Trubisky now has options, where last year he didn't. I mean, you look at the receivers he had last year, it was, what, Cameron Meredith and a bunch of guys who either often injured or you don't really know. And now he's got Allen Robinson and Taylor Gabriel and Trey Burton. Now, some of those guys have to stay healthy, but that's all of a sudden a more potent offense than what Mitchell Trubisky had on February 1st. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is a big concern for the Lions because this division got a lot harder. The Vikings defense is still maybe the best in the NFL, and they got better. The Vikings offense, we'll see what happens, but they do get Dalvin Cook back, and they add Kirk Cousins, who's more established than Case Keenum. And the Packers are the Packers. They still have Aaron Rodgers, who is, you know, depending how you feel about Tom Brady, he's either the best quarterback in the NFL or the second best quarterback in the NFL. And, yeah, they lost Jordy Nelson, but they still have Randall Cobb, and they added Jimmy Graham, and I think their defense got better. So I look at those things, and I'm like, well, if you're the Detroit Lions, you have to feel okay about yourself, but you also have to be really concerned that everyone you might think you've gotten better. I personally, like I said, I think they were at stasis or maybe got a little bit worse, but everyone else around you, at least on paper in March, got better. But John, as both you and I know, winning in March doesn't necessarily mean winning in the fall. The NFL history is littered with teams in the free agency era that have bought big in March thinking they're going to win and then end up face planting once the season actually starts.
Mm-hmm. No question about that. I don't know. Do you think there's frustration from Matthew Stafford because, he's now been around, since 2009 and hasn't had, the playoff win and all that stuff. He's had great success. He's, the second highest paid quarterback. But is there any frustration there?
I don't know. I haven't sensed that. I think the way you look at Stafford's career is kind of hard because he came into a situation not unlike provided the Browns take a quarterback at number one overall, what that quarterback's going to come in with. Although I would argue Matthew Stafford's situation was more adverse because he was the starter from day one, where the Browns have Tyrod Taylor, where they don't have to start that number one overall pick or number four overall pick, providing they pick a quarterback here. I don't think that that's going to be as big of a thing, but Matthew Stafford, you have to really look at that and say 2009-2010 were washes for him because he had very little talent around him. They were still really building that roster or trying to build that roster, plus he was hurt. He missed a lot of games in those first two seasons. 2011, he had a 5,000-yard year. He had Calvin Johnson, and they've been better the last few years. Matthew Stafford has been better the last few years. I think if they don't win a playoff game, maybe win a division in the next two or so years, then you're going to probably see a lot of frustration from Matthew Stafford, but I think you're going to see a lot of frustration from a lot of people because one thing that's kind of gone overlooked, I wrote about it, a couple other people have written about it, but what the Lions did was Matthew Stafford, Bob Quinn, and Matt Patricia's contracts are all matched up to end in 2022. So that's 5 years. So theoretically, what the Lions management has done, Rod Wood and the ownership, is they've kind of set a window of, listen, you have 5 years to figure this out and become a winner. Otherwise, you can get rid of all of you. And we all know that five really is probably four when you look at it. So that to me is, I think there's pressure on every, on all of them now. And if they don't win in a year or two, there should be frustration on all of them. And there'll probably be blame on all of them. But right now, I don't think he's super frustrated because they've, if you look at it, they've been building a lot. And I think that they have the most total offensive pieces for Matthew Stafford that they've really ever had, other than maybe that 2013 season when they had Nate Burleson and Calvin Johnson and Reggie Bush and Brandon Pettigrew was still a viable tight end. Obviously, he's out of the league now. And Joique Bell. That was a pretty loaded offense. This one that's coming up this year theoretically could be better, but they need to get him a running game, and they're trying to do that with LeGarrette Blount and probably a rookie that's being added. So I think if you don't see more progress this year and next year, then you'll really see frustration. But I haven't totally sensed that yet from Matthew Stafford. There's been points here and there where you've definitely seen frustration. I think you saw that in the first part of the 2015 season when the offense was bad, the whole team was bad, that led to Joe Lombardi's firing. But he hasn't outwardly expressed that. But Matthew Stafford's also not a guy that's really ever going to outwardly express something like that, or at least hasn't been throughout his career.
Interesting. How's Matt Patricia? What do you like about him?
He's a really personable guy. That struck me right off the top. I talked to a lot of people about him, but I didn't know what to expect because he didn't do press conferences really up until Super Bowl week, because in New England they do teleconferences with coordinators, so you don't see the coordinators ever. Listen, he's done everything right so far. But it's easy to say that when you haven't played a game, you've been somewhat cagey about what you're going to do defensively, and you're working for a guy that's one of your good friends in Bob Quinn. So everything has worked out well for Matt Patricia so far. He's a very, like I said, personable guy, a friendly guy. I think they're trying to build the team to what he wants. Every person I've talked to, for the most part, likes the guy a lot, including former players, former coaches. You can run the gamut. Everybody really likes him. I mean, even the sports information director at Syracuse, who I knew from when I was at Syracuse, when I was looking for people to talk to about Matt Patricia and trying to get in touch with some former Syracuse people, like, she gushed about him. So I look at that and I say, well, okay, a lot of people seem to like this guy. But that's nice. I mean, a lot of people like Jim Caldwell, too, and that didn't lead to winning results on the field. So I think that by the end, people really didn't like Jim Caldwell all that much because of what he was doing on the field and some of his, I don't know whether stubbornness is the right word or just non-answers toward the media in the end. And we all know this. Winning makes a guy imminently more likable than losing. And right now, Matt Patricia hasn't lost the game yet. So he's really likable in Detroit. But so far, he's been really personable as far as dealing with the media and just generally being a friendly human being.
Well, that sounds good. And I guess, did he assemble a good coaching staff?
Remains to be seen. He assembled a very Syracuse coaching staff. It's 8 or 9 guys, I think. Yeah, like from the video, obviously, Patricia has some Syracuse ties. His defensive coordinator was his old boss in former Syracuse head coach Paul Pasqualoni. Their video guy is a Syracuse guy. Their head of research is a Syracuse guy. I mean, there's a lot of Syracuse ties around. The offensive staff is pretty much the same, other than the offensive line coach, and the tight ends coach is now who was Al Golden. Al Golden's now linebackers coach. So they've brought in a couple of other coaches on the offensive side. The offensive staff, for the most part, is the same. There's a new quarterbacks coach, George Godsey, who was in Houston before he came to Detroit and was like a special projects defensive researcher last year. Defensively, it's a whole new staff, and it's an okay staff, but I think there are just a lot of questions. Matt Patricia seems like he's going to be the guy in charge of the defense. He hasn't totally given an indication one way or the other when he's been asked that question. He kind of dances around it a little bit. But I think it really remains to be seen. There are some good teachers on that staff, but I think you look around the NFL and most staffs have good teachers. So again, I think it's going to come down to what happens during training camp and then in the spring and also obviously on Sundays and during the weeks in the fall. I know that's kind of a long non-answer there, but I think it's just one of those remains to be seen things.
And so what's the plan right now for Deshaun Shedd?
He's going to compete to be a starter opposite Darius Slay. Slay has one of those positions locked down, and it's going to be between Deshaun Shedd, Nevin Lawson, who was the starter last year, who re-signed, and last year's second-round pick, Tease Tabor, for that other starting role outside. And one of those three guys, along with all-pro returner Jamal Agnew, could end up being the starting guy in the slot because Quandre Diggs should be the team's starting safety, but they also re-signed Tavon Wilson. So one of those two guys will win that role, too. And if Diggs loses that role, he can move down to the slot also. But Shedd is going to be a piece, and he's going to be a guy who's going to definitely be in that competition for the starting cornerback slot on the outside opposite Darius Slay. And I would think that based on money, they expect him to win the job, I would think. They haven't come out and said that. No one from the organization has talked since they signed Deshaun Shedd. Deshaun Shedd hasn't talked. So it's tough to know what. And Nevin Lawson, who they re-signed, hasn't talked. So it's tough to know what exactly they're expecting from him, but based off the money and based off of when they signed him, it would definitely seem like he will be no worse in a competition for it, if not expected to win that job.
Interesting. So that could be kind of fun to see. All right. So overall, it looks like you'll have fun with Luke Wilson. It could be entertaining with Matt Patricia. In fact, go back to Paul Pasqualoni. I mean, how old is he? Because he's ancient, isn't he?
He is, I don't know his exact age. He's late. I want to say late 60s. I mean, so he was Syracuse's head coach when I was at Syracuse. And I have been out of Syracuse for close to two decades now, which makes me feel horribly old. But he was the head coach then. And I mean, he had been around for a while at that point. He's got to be late 60s, early 70s. I apologize for not knowing that off the top of my head here. But yeah, he's been around a long time. I also think he's going to be a sounding board for Matt Patricia. Matt Patricia hasn't exactly said that because he hasn't talked all that much since making all those hires, but you want to have guys around you that you're comfortable with. At the combine, he was asked about his staff, and he said, listen, you don't get to put together the perfect staff that you want right out of the gate because some guys have jobs, some guys are unavailable. But in Paul Pasqualoni, I think that's a guy he wanted on his staff if he could get him, because that's who gave him his shot in Division One. That's the guy who really gave him a shot and jump-started his career. Matt Patricia went from Syracuse to the Patriots. So you see that, and I think you see a guy in Paul Pasqualoni that Matt Patricia wants to have around, wants to be able to say, hey, listen, when you were a head coach, you did this. You've been all over the place. What did you do here as a head coach? What did you see here from this head coach to make sure he's going along on the right path? Because Matt Patricia has been four places as a coach, maybe five, but four places for the most part as a coach in his life, and only one place in the NFL, and that's New England. Before that, Syracuse, Amherst, Oral PI, and I'm blanking on one other place. I mean, that's the extent of his coaching career. His coaching career has extended 300 miles of really I-90 in between New York and Massachusetts, and that's it. I mean, he's got a breadth of experience in New England, but he hasn't really been out there and been exposed to a lot of different systems and a lot of different schemes because Bill Belichick's been in New England that entire time. So in Paul Pasqualoni, I think he's got a guy that's been a lot of places and has seen a lot of things and can maybe make helpful suggestions of saying, yeah, you guys might have done this way and it worked there, but this team might be able to be more beneficial by doing X or Y. And I think that's maybe going to be Paul Pasqualoni's biggest role within their organization, because he gives Matt Patricia a guy who really has the opposite of what he has, which is a ton of experience in a lot of places.
Michael Rothstein, thank you as always. Great talking to you and getting ready for another season. But, man, this free agency thing is faster than I've ever seen. This has been incredible.
Yeah. Oh, it was honestly, typically free agency week, I joke with my friends and, like, I will see you in a week because you're basically glued to, you know, the phone, the couch, the computer, all of that. I go to the gym at 5:30 every morning during free agency week, which is, you know, and then I'm just around making phone calls. this thing went lightning quick, really, for a lot of teams in the league. Not so much the Lions. They were more quiet, but I was shocked at how quickly things moved. It felt like by Wednesday at noon, pretty much you knew where almost every big name was going, and a lot of like mid-level, mid-tier guys as well. And obviously there are a few stragglers, like Ndamukong Suh, and Dontari Poe was out there for a while, but most of the markets, I thought, moved a lot quicker than I can remember in my years covering the league.
I counted up, it's 139 guys have moved to different teams. And I think last year there may have been 166 total. I mean, this has been incredible.
Yeah, I think it's a sign of things to come, too. I think as you see more and more GMs willing to make trades, willing to really almost take more of, in my opinion, again, this is just my opinion and speculation, almost take more of a Major League Baseball, NHL, NBA approach to free agency and player movement and player acquisition, I think you're going to see more of that in the future. I think you're going to see more. That was maybe what struck me more than anything was the amount of trades. It felt like when I was growing up, when I was in my 20s and when I started covering the league 5 years ago, you didn't hear about many trades, period. And it seemed like there were a ton of trades, and that to me was, I think, the biggest eye-opening thing of this free agency period. It felt like there were just a lot more moves made, and that to me could be a sign of things to come.
Mm-hmm. No, stay tuned. 21 trades so far.
I think it makes for a more exciting period.
I know. It makes it good. Hey, Michael, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime.
Mike Rothstein, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rashid in Bothell. Hey, Rashid.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm fine. Just got back from Pakistan of my parents' 50th wedding anniversary, and it was so good to see my mom. And I know how glowingly you speak about your mom and stuff, mm-hmm. and I think we share that. Like I am what I am is because of my mom, you know.
Yes,
so,
we're both so fortunate.
Yes, it was amazing. It was amazing. Hey, Professor, I actually don't have a question, but I have a statement. I just want a brief take on it.
Yeah.
You know, like as a Seahawks fan and as an outside observer of the game as well, I was thinking like, you know, Seahawks are taking a step back, and I wasn't too happy with what they did this offseason and stuff. But now that, like, we're 2 weeks away into this process and stuff, and I think it's that method, there is a method to the madness, and how Pete Carroll has always said that you cannot win in the first quarter, you cannot win in the second quarter. So that's what they did. They made, like, what, 282 transactions in, like, 2010 and, like, slowly rebuild the team, mm-hmm. and like they had like one of the most incredible runs that any team has had besides the New England Patriots and the Packers. And now it's like open season on Seahawks that they are going down and everything. And I just have a comment for every Seahawks fan and like the football fans. The Seahawks, the team under Pete Carroll, never goes away. And I think they're going to be back, and it's going to be maybe a tough year in 2018. But I think there's a method to the madness, and I'm actually starting to feel very hopeful. What's your take, sir?
Yeah, because honestly, I fumbled around for like about 5-6 days trying to figure out what they're doing because, you know, a couple of things conflicted. I mean, for example, you know, you collect compensatory picks, and they right now are at the risk of, you know, not getting a third and maybe 2 fours, okay? But what you can see what they're trying to do, they're trying to get baseline running game. So, you know, and again, they're trying to get it at a moderate price. So they get Ed Dixon to block as a tight end and a fullback. You know, now they get DJ Fluker to come in, and he's going to be the power right guard, you know, just kind of the grinder, the guy who's going to try to run behind. All right, so they make those two moves. And then, of course, they didn't do too much on defense, but the reason so far is that you had a preview of what this team was going to be like, you know, in the final 7 games of the season without Cam Chancellor, without Richard Sherman, and without Cliff Averill. Now, again, you don't know what it's going to be like without Michael Bennett, but and then, of course, Sheldon Richardson was a one-year fill-in. So, you know, those 5 guys are removed, but you can also see that they figured that in the second half of the season, they were like number 6 in fewest yards allowed. They were pretty good. And it's not that they were great. They had a bad game, obviously, against the Rams. That was frustrating from everybody's standpoint. But, you know, you throw all that together and you say, okay, I see what they're trying to do. The importance is running the football. And so they're slowly trying to rebuild the running game and then try to make sure that they get some good young athletes on defense and try to put all that together. And so now I kind of see the rationale of what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and see, and that's what I think Pete Carroll's like the success like in 2012 to I would say 2015 and 16 was the lines. Like our lines were relatively like the identity of this team, both lines and stuff. And so he's getting back to that, and I think his formula, he thinks that it can still work. It worked for the New Orleans Saints last year after such a dismal like 3-4 years. So I think I'm hopeful. I think Pete and John know what they're doing and stuff, and like despite the heartburn of the local fans, including myself, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
But I think I'm actually slowly coming around, and I see a very competitive 2018 season for the Seahawks.
Yes, I agree. I mean, because again, you can't write them off, and the reason you can't write them off is that you have Pete Carroll as a coach and you have Russell Wilson as the quarterback. And so,
yeah, and one more thing, and people have to know that, like, none of the Seattle players who leave and everything, they're really unemployed. I mean, they get jobs. Like, they even get, like, even our O-linemen get, like, second and third contract. Like, look at Gilliam. So, I mean, so we do coach well here and stuff. So I'm actually hopeful that we'll have the pieces together, sir. But it was really nice talking to you, Professor. You have a good weekend.
Okay, appreciate it. Welcome back. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up the phone lines. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now, let's go to Jet. Hey, Jet, how are you?
Dr. John, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How about you?
Well, it's the sun's breaking through. There's no more snow. And I think McKagan is just putting together a very nice free agent class this year.
Yeah, it's not the sexiest, but I think I like it. I think it's not bad.
The only question I have is, what's going on with Donkey Kong Sue? That one just kind of vexes me. I don't know why they would want to bring him into that clubhouse.
Right.
And I don't know what because they supposedly have the highest offer on the table right now. Do you have any idea how much they're offering him at this point?
No, my guess is that they're probably, because you can see the way the defensive tackle worked last year and it looks like this year. Okay, so if you can't get the big deal, you take a one-year deal at eight. My guess is probably in that 8-5 range.
For 1 year?
For 1 year, yeah.
Huh. That one kind of surprises me because they've done such a good job the last 2 years cleaning out that clubhouse. You know, they finally got rid of Wilkerson, and, you know, Sue doesn't have the best of reputations as a clubhouse guy. So I'm not, you know, I can understand why they would want a powerful tackle to play next to Leo. But I think also what interests me is this. I'm wondering what they're going to do is whether they're going to go, you know, still play the game of the 3-4 and then maybe sometime a 4-3, you know, some type of hybrid deal. Because what they're going to have to do is they've got to find a pass rush from the outside. Now, obviously, they gave up a bunch of draft picks, so it's going to be tough to do in this, I think, in this go-around. But are they going to try to bring it from an outside linebacker? Are they going to try to bring it with a down lineman? But if they bring in Sue, are they kind of committing themselves to a 4-3 at that point?
You would think, because, I mean, which, of course, I don't think they would make a commitment that they can't honor, but I think that, you know, to me, that just makes the most sense. I mean, he fits better in a 3-4 than a 4-3, although you can see the teams that want him, most, the two of them are 3-4 teams, which, of course, kind of is a little different.
So I'm kind of, you know, I can't quite figure out how they're going to put all the pieces together yet again with their, you know, just chronic collection of defensive tackles. But they've got to find somebody either on either a defensive end or a strong side linebacker. I'm sorry, weak side linebacker that's got to bring some heat on the pass.
Yeah, because you figure Avery Williamson's going to end up being a strong side linebacker, right?
I would assume so. Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is going to be interesting with him because remember, DeMario Davis's problem, part of his problem was he had difficulty covering, you know, in the passing game as well.
Right.
So what they did last year to make him a three-down linebacker was basically they kind of foisted most of the pass coverage responsibility off to Darren Lee, who's obviously much quicker and much more agile. I'm wondering if they're going to try to do the same thing with Avery and try to turn him into a kind of a more of a three-down player as well.
That could be, yeah. I mean, but again, what I liked, I think the biggest thing that I liked is I like their secondary now. The two safeties,
yeah.
Getting Trumaine Johnson, getting Claiborne back. I really like what they did there.
Bringing Claiborne back was really unsung, but I think that was a real big piece of the puzzle because now they're covered for this year, and it also gives their kids a chance to grow, develop, find out who may very well turn into an NFL cornerback. Because remember, they drafted two kids in the tail end of last year's draft, and neither one of them really got much action. And you've also got Burris, who was, a third-round pick a couple years ago. I mean, are these guys going to pan out, or are they not going to pan out? What I'm also wondering is, what's going to happen with Screen? I wonder if they're going to keep him.
I think he
may be
gone.
He's got a big salary hit this year at 8.5, I think it is.
Yeah.
That's kind of a lot for a slot corner.
Yeah, no, I would have to think that he's going to be in jeopardy.
I'm kind of thinking so, too, especially, now, he played pretty well the second half of the year, but, boy, he was a penalty machine. But I think part of that was they were kind of stretching his abilities a little bit, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think if they put him back into the slot, he may be much better.
No,
but,
I think
I don't know. I'm a little confused about all that. But, I know they gave up a lot for the and I know you're kind of slamming them a bit for giving up all those twos, and I can kind of appreciate that. But, if they hit, they hit. But what I do kind of like about the way McKagan is going about the free agent class is I think, with the exception of an edge rusher or outside linebacker, I don't know if they're going to find something of strong value that deep in the draft. But from the other stuff that they need in the draft, picking up more of an electric running back in case, to kind of supplement the backfield, they can get that in 3, 4, 5, 6. They need interior linemen, the center. They can get that in 3, 4, 5, 6. A lot of the pieces that they still need of their puzzle, they need a right tackle, ultimately. I think they'll move Shell to the left tackle. But they're going to need a tackle because while they've got, an awful lot of mileage last year, and I thought that was a great pickup for their left tackle, Beecham, I don't know what they're going to give him this year and what they're going to have next year, but they're going to have to find a replacement. He's a hold-the-fort kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got to find some of that. But they can get that in the tail end of the draft, too. So what I like about McKagan is he supplemented the free agent class, and what he's left bare is stuff I think he can find at the tail, in the bottom part of the draft. So I think he has a chance of making a nice cohesive off-season package.
Right. No, but again, I think that at least they were aggressive. And what quarterback do you think they'll take at 3, even though you don't want them to take a quarterback?
Well, I'm hoping they're going to take Joe Namath, that kid out of Alabama.
Yeah, no, I think
he's really mobile, and I hear he's got one hell of a cannon, really quick release.
Mm-hmm. Fur coats are nice, too.
But I don't know, John. I'm not going to pretend I haven't scouted these guys, but I think what we do know is by making that jump from 6 to 3 is they're not going to take Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just got to believe that Cleveland's taken Darnold. So I think you're looking at either Allen or Rosen. And that's going to be interesting to see what the Giants do. I mean, the Jets may have made the Giants draft class this year because if somebody is going to move up, it's going to cost them a king's ransom.
Agreed.
But I think it was a beautiful move by McKagan's part. Yes, they gave up 3 number 2s, which was a lot. I understand that. But they really did a solid job boxing out the Bills in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Bills are going to go and play that game, it's going to cost them an awful lot. It's going to hurt. So I think from that kind of competitive perspective, I think it was a beautiful move by McKagan from a chess perspective.
Right. Hey, Jet, thank you for the phone call.
Take care, John. Talk next week.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing and running this show. And, of course, we take your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to John in Ballard. Hey, John.
Hey, Professor. How's it going today?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's always a pleasure to listen to you, John. I got a couple quick questions for you. Have you heard anything about the possibility of NFL geographic realignment?
No. No, no plans for that whatsoever. Now, what would prompt that, or what do you think? Is that just because of the everything kind of lines right now, particularly with St. Louis not having a team, and now the Rams in the NFC West? Naturally, Vegas is still West Coast, but no talk of any alignment.
Okay, I was just curious. I saw something on an NFL site about the possibility of a realignment. It just piqued my interest. I wanted to get your thoughts on that matter.
Yep, I don't think you have to worry about that whatsoever.
Okay. Another quick question for you, John. When the Raiders are going to move officially to Las Vegas, is there any talk about Oakland trying to get another team or San Diego getting another team? It just seems it's very disheartening for me, myself being a fan, to see teams that have been in the city for a long time lose their team. And I was hoping that Oakland and San Diego would be able to recoup and get a team again.
Doesn't look good. No, because again, I think this has been a little bit of a mini move because of some West Coast stadium issues and of course the St. Louis issue. And so because of that, you have because there's no team that really does have any plans to move at this stage. I mean, so no, I think that it's going to be very difficult. Expansion is really not on the options at the moment. So no, I think that you can almost forget about those chances. They've lost their team, and I think it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to get them back.
Wasn't there talk, John, about St. Louis trying to build a brand new stadium to attract an NFL team?
Not of late, no. I mean, they had the team, and they elected to let them go.
Right.
I mean, there was a little bit of a mini fight, but when they got the team, one of the things they said, they would provide a stadium that would keep them in the top quadrant of revenue, and that didn't happen at the Edward Jones Dome. So they end up losing the franchise, and really no chance to get them back. San Diego was slow in moving, and Oakland was slow in moving, and so because of that, they lose the franchise.
Yeah, it's just tragic. One last question for you real quick, John. Do you believe that Bruce Arians is really finished with the game, or do you think he'll come back and coach if he gets another opportunity?
Not as a head coach, no. I mean, I think he'll try to get into television, which I think he's already in the process of doing, and I think that as a full-time coach, he's done. He's not going to do it again.
Okay, thanks. You have a great day.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John. Another great show.
Thank you.
Hey, besides tomorrow, any other series?
I'm getting a whole list. I know that I think April 3rd, April 8th, there's going to be a whole bunch here coming up in the beginning of April.
Okay, good deal. Hey, can you give me an update on this tackle Denver picked up yesterday?
Jared Valdir. I mean, Jared Valdir a couple years ago was a Pro Bowl, he was a Pro Bowl alternate at left tackle for Arizona. And then they moved him to the right side. His play kind of declined a little bit. And I think some people thought maybe he was losing a little bit of interest in football. Whatever it is, I think, he'll have a chance to bounce back. I mean, talent-wise, he has it. And naturally, they're going to be having him at right tackle. He just, when they paid him, what was it, $8.5 million, which was good left tackle money at that time. He then overpriced himself once he moved over to right tackle and didn't play that well.
So do you think with them shoring up their offensive line that it's definitely leading to a quarterback at number five?
You start to think that way. Well, I think it depends on which quarterback because, at least they've now for 2 years, they've got Case Keenum. Okay, so now I think that maybe they might consider Josh Allen. I don't think they would go for Baker Mayfield. I don't know if they would go for Josh Rosen, but I think Josh Rosen will be gone. I mean, because they don't need that quarterback to be able to step up soon to be able to play now that they got a 2-year relationship with Case Keenum. But I think the upside of Allen could really intrigue John Elway.
Okay, yeah, I was listening to the show yesterday, and guy said that with Allen's pro day yesterday that he believes that Allen will be the number one pick. You don't find that happening?
No way. Absolutely not. I don't see that at all. I think Sam Rosen did well enough that, because you even hear rumblings out of the Giants that they would like to get Darnold, but they're not going to get him because he's going to the Cleveland Browns.
Okay, and then one last question. Do you believe that Buffalo has any interest in trying to get into the number five spot?
They definitely have interest to get in the number five spot because I think they would take any of the four quarterbacks up top. So, yeah, I think they would – because remember, they ended up as the weakest of the quarterbacks in free agency getting A.J. McCarron. So, no, I think they're definitely trying to move up.
Would that be worth it to trade their two first rounds for Denver's five, or does that equal out?
That wouldn't equal out. They'd have to do more than that.
Oh,
I mean, to go from
great.
12 to 5, I mean, you're going to have to throw in probably three draft choices, three or four.
Oh, nice. All right, John, hey, you have a great weekend.
All right, hey, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Brian in Seattle. Hey, Brian.
Yeah, hey, John. How's it going, bud?
Good. How are you?
Good. Question for you. For the Cowboys right now, how would you kind of rank their free agency? Obviously, they only signed Hearns.
What do you think about
It's really just starting, and so it's not that good. I mean, it's certainly better than last year with all the players that they lost. I mean, they lose four guys in the secondary. I mean, you can see they're trying to get some speed at the wide receiver position. So Deontay Thompson comes in, but again, he's not real accomplished. And how good is he? And then secondly, you know, they made the move, yesterday to, go ahead and get a wide receiver. I think if they can get one more, they can do it. I mean, Allen Hurns, I think, can help him. He's a good receiver. He's a slot guy. I think he can take over for Beasley, but they still need to get one more. If they get one more, then all of a sudden I think Dez Bryant may not be there.
Do you think he's taken over for Beasley or more taken over for Terrence Williams?
I think maybe more Beasley, because again, Hurns is more of that slot guy, and Beasley just kind of works the middle of the field. I mean, because Terrence can do some stuff on the outside.
Yeah. And then as far as the division, and I know it's early, obviously Eagles look to be the favorite. Would you say the Cowboys are number two, and then Giants, Redskins, or Redskins, Giants?
I'd say Giants, Redskins as a number three. But I think, clearly Dallas is in the number two spot because they got a young quarterback, a running game. They still need to get better on defense, and they haven't made enough moves there. But, no, I think that they're making some progress.
Yeah, do you think I actually wasn't a huge DeMarcus Lawrence fan, and I know I'm in the minority there. Mm-hmm. Do you think he was more of a one-year wonder in the contract year, or do you think his contract is going to be justified?
I think his contract can be justified because I think he can be a really good player. I mean, he's got a lot of talent, and he's got the pass rush, and it took him a few years to get set up, but now that he's set up, he's pretty good.
Yeah, I was just a little worried. He had, two back surgeries and then mm-hmm. also a suspension. So I'm always hesitant, of course. Once he signs his big deal, it's going to be huge. And it's
going to
be a lot of guaranteed money for somebody who has...
It is, but hey, that's what you got to do. I mean, at least he's earned it. Hey, thank you for the phone call. And again, we'll be coming on Monday from the owners' meeting in Orlando, Florida at 10 o'clock. And of course, back next Saturday at 12, it's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.